Santiago, and I am joined today by the lovely actress, singer, Angela Burchett.
Mason, you forgot about me. Lisa.
Lisa G, you here?
Yeah, I've been here. I listen to the music.
Welcome. Are you here, Angela? Okay, we're just going to go into another song and wait for our guest to come in.
You be just an extra part. Smaller, quicker, smarter, faster. Put your code, get in there. Feel it lost, look around.
Sorry, the computer's down.
Push a button, pull a lever. Techno is a super clever. High efficient, low cost, human slave, mental boss. Building gadget, break a circuit. Doesn't need a man to work. Stop, lady, look, mister, listen to the clock, sisters.
Computers rule the world.
life is hard. Computers don't believe in God. Floppy disk, software, automated atmosphere. Not heaven sent, but hell bent. Computer for a president. Macintosh, Apple II, replacement for me and you. Don't eat lunch, never rest. Personally, I'm not impressed. IBM, Commodore, we do less. They do more. They do more, we do nothing. I'ma get just a butt.
Oh, do you know?
Sisters, computers rule the world, and we're back with the lovely actress, singer, Angela Burchett. Welcome to the show, Angela.
Thank you for having
Welcome.
Hi.
Hi.
We are so glad to have you here. We just played a little bit of the Clark Sisters, and you just came off of an amazing portrayal of one of the Clark Sisters in one of the biggest movies on cable this year. How does that feel?
Yeah. It still was super, super overwhelming sometimes, exciting. But it's still very much like a super cool moment for me. And I know, you know, it's been a good while now since the movie was out, over a month now, and I'm still getting messages from folks who've seen it and just have seen it over and over and over and over again, and the impact that it had on them is still it's quite something. So I'm very honored to have been a part and to be the person to tell Jackie's story.
You did an amazing job.
Thank you.
I loved it.
Thank you so much.
I loved it.
Yeah,
great. I'm glad
you
enjoyed it.
Yeah, you had her mannerisms, everything down packed. Everything. It was amazing. It must be a full circle moment for you.
Oh yeah, I mean, as an actor and a singer, because my background is in singing first, actually, and theater. So to be able to kind of pull all those things together as an actor, a singer, and you know, and then to be in a film, and then to be in a film about women that are, for me and so many other people, so iconic and legendary. I don't know how I'll top that, you know. Even you know, I'm sure I'll do many more things in my career. I'm just, you know, getting my wheels spinning here, and I've been in the business that's for probably 15 years now, but so I'm noting more things will come, but I don't know that there will be anything as special to me and as amazing and once in a lifetime as this project was.
It's amazing. Yeah, I've watched some videos of you and the Burchett sisters, and and I see you guys singing "My Redeemer Liveth," and I'm like, how this must feel for you to grow up listening to the Clark sisters performing their songs, and then being an avid fan for Dorinda Clark Cole, and then here you are some odd years later, and you're portraying them in one of the biggest movies of the year. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. If you had told me back then, you know, my teenage years and my early 20s, back when we were doing so much singing of their music, if you had told me, you know, at this age in your life, you're gonna be in a movie about them and you're gonna play one of them, I would not have believed it. I posted the week the film came out, that I remember being at Bailey Cathedral, which is where Karen Clark Sheard had her made her solo debut with Finally Karen, and I was a senior in high school that year, so I guess that kind of dates me. Is you know what year that album came out?
Hey, we right there with you.
You know.
Don't feel bad.
I remember being so excited, and you know, I grew up in church. All I could really do was go to church and church functions. So you know, I stood in line, and you know, it was the biggest thing that at that time. You know, everybody was there, and you know, I remember like it was yesterday being there and watching Donna Lawrence and Kiara, and you know, and just thinking, oh my God, like this is amazing. And I never in a million years would have thought, you know, 20 something years later, you'll be doing a movie about these ladies, and they all were there, you know, and I'm like, what?
That's amazing. And you know, one of the things I like listening to your voice, and then, from your Broadway project that you did with Broadway Sings, and listening to you do the Motor Mouth Maybelle cover,
okay.
And then going back and listening to you do the My Redeemer Liveth, and I listened to your voice. You sound more like Dorinda to me than and then I read some more and I find out that your nickname used to be Little Dorinda or something like that.
I grew up at a church called Greater Grace Temple, and it was a mega church, and I mean, I literally was born there. All my family, you know, went there, my grandmother, everybody, so I'm used to getting flung up in front of, you know, a couple thousand people every Sunday since I was a kid. You know, it's not probably 10 or 11 probably was the first time I sang, and I did. I went on to direct the youth choir there, and so we did a lot. I had a chance to do a lot of different songs by a lot of different artists, but I always kind of kept coming back to Dorinda, and I don't know how that actually happened. I think I just loved her voice so much, and, you know, I loved all of the things that she led. I was just always drawn to her style, and you know, I nicknamed her the Pocket Queen, because I think she is just, you know, that's one of the things that she brings to the Clark sisters that makes them so special and unique is that, you know, she has this certain way of her rhythmic style of singing, and I'm a drummer too. I've played the drums since I was a kid, and I think just the concept of playing a rhythmic instrument, for me, that made me kind of draw my ear as a vocalist to her, and it just kind of never went away. And in through college, like we would do, I sang in a concert choir, but we have a gospel section we do, and we always do a Dorinda Clark song, and the director would always say, "Ann, you got to lead this," and I'm like, "Okay," you know. And so when I actually got to meet her when we were filming, and one of the execs is a friend of mine at the network, kind of, you know, dared me to sing for her, and I didn't plan on it or anything. I just did it, and it just came right out. She even said, I can't believe you sound more like me than I sound like me.
Yeah, you did.
I saw
that clip. You literally saw, and I was looking at the clip. I said, look at Angela acting like she don't know this song. Like, well, how's it go? I was like, shit. Man, you killed that song. So I mean, like, it's so impromptu moment. You just, right in front of your idol, and you just killed it.
Younger and you started singing, were you nervous getting on stage at first? Because I know I'm a karaoke person or in the shower, so I'm not, you know, into being in front of people necessarily. How did you overcome that when you first started out?
You know, to be quite honest, I don't think I ever got over it. I think I've always been someone who gets a little nervous before I sing, but not in a, like, debilitating way. You know, some people have, like, really bad stage fright, or, like, kids have, you know, they get really, really scared. So I never had that, but I think I always had, like, a healthy dose of jitter, you know, and I still do. And if I ever have a moment where I don't, I get a little worried because that's abnormal for me. But I guess as a kid, because music was always a part of my life, even before, you know, I actually started singing, you know, I watched my father. He's a band leader, and he, you know, performed. And, you know, so I was always around my dad when he was performing. And, you know, as I got a little bit older, all my friends, I kind of gravitated to the musical friends, people I found out, like, did what I did. And so we all just kind of did the same thing. So I really, I never really had a chance to get, like, really scared and have to figure out how to overcome it. I've just kind of always had that natural jitter thing, and I think you need it. When I talk to artists, or, you know, I coach students, or when I was a teacher and I taught and coached students, I would tell them, you know, there's supposed to be a healthy level of jitters. It means you care. It means that you know you're gonna put your best foot forward. So, you know, I don't mind it, but, you know, I know some people who don't get nervous at all, and I don't understand those people.
Yeah, that's not me. My legs shake.
Oh, no.
So how was it being back in, was it 2005, you left Detroit and went straight to New York to pursue musical theater? How was that, like, what gave you the strength and the confidence to go ahead and say, you know what, I'm going to do this?
I think because I had gone the road of, you know, go to college, get a degree, and, you know, use your degree, work in your field, and I had done it. You know, I had done all of that, and I realized that I wasn't fulfilled. Like, although it's a huge accomplishment to, you know, to do that, if it's not what you're passionate about, it'll show, or you'll feel it, or you won't feel the days that are hard. That lack of passion is going to make it hard for you to put your best foot forward. And I started to realize, I really realized it toward the end of school, actually, because I was doing summer stock, which is just, you know, theater jobs in the summer. I was doing summer stock and doing some other things, and I loved it so much, but I knew, you know, when I graduated, I was going to go home and be a teacher. And, you know, I think I kind of swallowed that down and just say, you know, just get it done, finish your degree, finish what you started, go home, teach, you know. And, you know, a couple years in, I realized, yep, this is not my passion. I love my students. I do enjoy teaching, but it's not what I love. And I knew after a few visits to New York over the years in college and there and after, just the energy here, the people, the pace, it was just me. Like, I just fit right in. Like, it didn't overwhelm me. I didn't feel like, ooh, it's too many people, it's too dirty, none of that. It was just, mm-hmm. Oh, I have to be here. And the door opened up for me to transition to here, and I ran through it, and I never really looked back. I do, you know, it's been almost 15 years now that I've been here, and it gets hard sometimes not having my family close by where I can just jump in my car and drive, you know, an hour or something and see them. I can't do that, but I've never been like a homesick person. So I just, you know, thank God for technology and the phone and, you know, and then when I do get a chance to go home, I go home. But it was my passion was here in New York City, and I knew I couldn't not pursue it. I would regret it for the rest of my life. And it has not been easy. You know, it's not coming to New York, you know, especially if you come here, you know, most kids who want to be on Broadway, they've gone to a conservatory that basically kind of preps you to enter the workforce being New York theater straight out of school. I didn't have that. I went a whole nother route. So it was daunting. It was a little scary at first. I was totally green in a lot of ways about the way auditions go and, you know, who's who and what's what. But I just, even that made me excited. Like, I want to learn. I want to know how this goes. And now, you know, I see young girls, you know, that I can tell when I'm at an audition, and this is like their first year in New York and their first audition season. They're so excited, you know, and I'm like, wow, I remember those days.
So how was it, like, from your first time going to New York and being in New York before you actually started booking, like, a show or some type of work?
Oh, you mean, like, when I first moved here?
Yeah, like, how, yeah, the process and waiting from moving there and then actually, you know, being on stage or something.
Yeah. So I actually, unbeknownst to me, I moved here in January of that year, and I didn't realize that the end of January, mid-February is when the summer auditions begin, along with Broadway stuff, if there's replacements or new shows. So I didn't know any of this, but I actually got here at the perfect time, so I wasn't, like, kind of sitting around waiting for auditions. I got here, and maybe about 3 weeks after I got here, it was time to rock and roll. So I, you know, I did the first season, auditions, and I booked my first job. Oh gosh, I should remember this. Oh yes, my first job was a tour, actually, that I booked with I guess the best way to describe it is the American version of Cirque du Soleil. And I was the only singer. I was the only black woman in the cast, and the show was all circus acts, acrobats, and strong men, and the girls that hang from the ceiling by their hair, and that kind of thing. And I was like the sole singer, but I was dressed as a ladybug because they did a lot of visual, like, black light tricks and stuff. And so my costume and my whole thing was built into the set. It was really cool. But it was my first job, so it took me out of New York, which I'm glad you asked me that, because I'm just now thinking about the fact that until maybe 2 or 3 years ago, most of my work was outside of New York. So I think that's the thing a lot of people don't realize when they come here. Like, they think, oh, I'm going to come here and, you know, work off Broadway or on Broadway or, you know, at the Public or somewhere, you know, the Signature or somewhere in New York. But a lot of actors, they kind of built their resume with regional credits. And that's kind of what I did, touring and regional credits. I've lived all over. I've worked all over. But I think that's great for people who are starting out who don't, you know, have a big job or something on their resume. Because when you go in for the big stuff, they want to see, like, what have you done? You know, and if you don't have anything on there, or one, you know, nice size credit there, you know, that can be a, you know, why? Like, why are you not, what's going on? So I've been fortunate to, I didn't wait too much after I got here and I booked a job. Now, I will say there have been long stints of time where I haven't booked anything. And that's the part people don't really talk about. You just see the jobs they do book. You don't see what they don't book. And so that's what led me to band work that I do here, and also my own show that I host, which became this huge thing here that I just didn't even see coming. But that's what happens when you come here. You kind of learn, like, what your other gifts and talents are. You do other things to make ends meet. And sometimes the things that you use to make ends meet are kind of, I don't know that if I hadn't started Lights Out on Broadway that I would have been in The Color Purple, because that's kind of how they started to get to know me. People from Broadway shows and indies and, you know, directors, they would just come by on a Monday night and be like, oh, my friend told me about this and I came. Wow, you're amazing. And then we just became cool from that. So, yeah, I've had a long, long journey with different things here in New York.
Sounds amazing. It's definitely inspirational to hear someone say that, you know, you went through the process of understanding that, hey, I'm doing what is suspected of me, of like going to college, getting the degree, working in that field. And then at the same time, you listen to your heart and it says that you didn't belong where you were and you did what was needed for you. And it's amazing mm-hmm. that you followed your dream and moved to New York. And 3 weeks later, you booked a show or, you know, a traveling tour show. And it somehow sustained you and made you, like, I would think to myself, if I went there and I booked a show first, like 3 weeks into it, less than a month, that I made the right decision. And mm-hmm. here we are now. I could definitely tell you that you definitely made the right decision. But it's very inspirational yeah. to hear a story like that.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. So, can you tell us like the process? I know, like when you were in, like when you're doing Broadway shows, like The Color Purple and Hairspray, things like that. And what was the process of learning lines? And then you guys have to do the show like what, maybe 3 or 4 times a night, or how does that work?
So Broadway is generally it's 8 shows a week. You depending on the schedule, Broadway and touring and other places have 2 different 8 show week schedules. You either would do your doubles on Wednesday and Saturday, or you do your doubles on Saturday and Sunday, which we call a 5 show weekend, which I don't like. I prefer to have one on Sunday so I can start my day off, have a really 2 full days off, because if you do the Wednesday, Saturday, you only have a matinee on Sunday, and then you have Sunday night off all of Monday and then all of Tuesday until you go in for work that night. So I prefer that, but a lot of shows do the other, and I've done both schedules. When I toured Hairspray, it was a little different because it was a non-union show. It was the same creative, the same Broadway show, but under a different union. So our schedule was different. It was more grueling. And that's kind of what we call like paying our dues when you do like a non-union bus and truck is what we call it, tour. And that's where you get really the schedule is however they set it. You could do, you know, be in 3 cities in 1 week, or you could have a string of one-nighters. I think on Hairspray, we did a 14 one-nighter run and once, and then we did a 16 one-nighter run. That's basically where you don't get a day off and you play in a different city every night for 14 days, 16 days, whatever it is. But once you move on up in the world and you become an Actors Equity member, they can't really do that to you anymore. So Broadway all has the same schedule. And, and you just kind of – you build your life and your routine around that. So for me, with Color Purple, for example, which my situation was even a little more different than that, because I was a swing on the Color Purple, which a swing is just a person who covers – who understudies more than one role. And it's usually a combination of multiple ensemble roles or an ensemble role and a principal. It just depends on what the need is. For me, I was a swing, but I was also, I was what's called a vacation swing. So a regular full-time swing, there's a bunch of different types of swings. There's an on-stage swing, there's a regular full-time swing, there's a vacation swing. Mine kind of was a hybrid because I was originally only supposed to be there through the summer. So basically just a temporary person until everybody was able to take their vacations. And then I would, you know, basically just as needed, but I was needed so much that they just kind of made me a regular swing. So basically my job is to come in every day, whether I'm on stage or not. And in The Color Purple, I covered all 3 church ladies. So, there were some days where a whole week or two would go by and I would just be at work. I have to come in every day. I'm paid to be there every day. But most of the time I'm like backstage, like goofing off or, you know, messing around with, you know, the other swings that's not on that day or in the stage management office. Or I just go out and watch the show because, you know, you don't get to go on every night. You want to go out and watch the show, track the tracks that you do so that you are, you know, at any point you could be called and say, hey, we need you to go on. And that happened to me. I've had different things happen. I was at work and literally, you know, everybody was in. No one had called out or no one was sick. And next thing I know, somebody's calling my name over the speaker backstage. Hey, Angela, we need you to go to Wigs. Rima's out, and you need to be ready to go in by whatever point it was in the show. And then that night, because that was a two-show day, that night I had to go in for a different church lady. So it's a very – being a swing is if you talk to – especially actors who have been in the business for a while, when you bring up swing, they'll say, if I don't have to be a swing, I don't want to, because, you know, it's tedious. You don't get to kind of settle in to doing the same thing every night. You've got to be okay with, you know, I could go to work for a week or two and just be sitting around, you know. But then there were times when I was on every single day for weeks because people were sick, people were taking vacations, all these things. So it's very interesting. You know, I think there's ins and outs to the theater world that people, mainstream people who are not necessarily regular theater goers understand. But it's a great experience. It was my second time ever being a swing on a show. But then when we did Color Purple on the road, I was an actual church lady, so I was not a swing anymore, and I also understudied Sophia. And same thing, you know, I was on every night, but there were certain times when the woman who played Sophia was out, and I had to go in for her. And when you're on stage every night, you don't necessarily get a chance to go out and watch the show to make sure, you know what you're doing. You just kind of get your stuff in rehearsal, and then pray they don't call you. Or pretty do call you if you're ready, you know. So, but it's very exciting, and but it takes a lot of stamina. You have to really like take care of your body, take care of your voice. You got to get your rest. You can't be doing a whole bunch of other things, even though I'm always doing a whole bunch of other things. But it's really cool, and I'm praying that Broadway will be able to bounce back from what we're going through right now. Because it's definitely going to look very different for a long time once Broadway's doors open again.
Right. Do you prefer to be a stage actress, singer, or do you prefer working in Hollywood? And now that you come off this big movie now, are you looking to do more projects in Hollywood or television work?
Yeah, you know, I've gotten asked that a few times, and I always am like, I'm torn because, you know, theater will always be my first love when it comes to, you know, being an actor, that thing. However, doing the movie and doing a couple other things before that really opened my eyes to how much I really enjoy that style of acting, because acting for TV or a film is different than theater. So it's technically it's different. And I really enjoy it. I think I connect to it very easily. And I enjoyed all of the new things, you know, the things about it that are new to me that don't exist in theater, because, you know, theater is very simple. It's on stage, you know, you're playing to a big room of people as opposed to, you know, a lens, and you have all these people all over the place in this little space you're shooting in, and, you know, it can be very tedious, but it's super challenging and fun. So to answer your question, yes, I definitely want to kind of put more of my energy into the TV world, but I'm also a singer. Like, that's what I know a lot of people whose first introduction to me ever is this film probably, you know, assume, oh, okay, you know, I'm sure she sings because she's, you know, she's in this and she's part of the group numbers, but I'm actually a singer first. So it will probably be hard for me to fully give all my time and energy into Hollywood and television, because I also enjoy live music, recording, you know, and I love that. That's like my favorite thing ever. So we'll see how things unfold.
Well, Miss Angela, since you love it so much, can you just give us a little snippet off of one of your albums just so that we can hear that soulful voice?
let's see. I did put out a cover album a long time ago. So, yeah, I'll sing something from that.
CD Baby, or is that it's a website?
Out anymore. It's my fault. I didn't renew with a distributor, and when you don't, they just, it's like it never existed. So I'm so sad, because it was totally a mistake oversight. And I get all the time from people who have that album or who heard it, like, oh, my God, do you still have it? Can I buy it? And I'm like, no, it's gone. But it's okay because that means it's time for new music, so, and which is what I'm doing right now. I'm recording right now. But there's a tune
what would be your style? What style of music would you go into, jazz or gospel or R&B?
All of it. All of
That's
it.
That's good.
That's what people will hear on my album. I'm not one. It won't be one style because I just don't do that. I sing all kinds of stuff. I love the fact that I can do that, you know?
Right.
So, ooh, sorry about that loud noise. This song is the arrangement. I loved it so much. I did it with a full orchestra at the American Music Theater in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, years ago. And I said, oh, I got to record this. It's a beautiful rendition. So here's a little bit of it's based off Linda Ronstadt, an old 80s light rock singer called Someone to Watch Over Me. I haven't sang this in so long. There's a single, there's a love is blind. So we're often told, seek and ye shall find. So I forgot the word. let thy hand in mine. Looking everywhere, haven't found him yet. He's the man that I cannot forget. Only man I ever think of with regret. I like to add his initials to my monogram. He's the only man I ever loved and won't forget. There's a man that I've been longing to see. I hope that he turns out to be someone who walked over me. I think that's all I can recall at the moment.
That was amazing. Amazing.
Thank you.
I was caught up in it. I was like, don't stop. Wow.
I've been trying to get all the Detroit singers to sing a little
everything.
Something.
I was. My eyes closed. I was just swaying. I was like, man, don't stop singing. Wow, that was amazing.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
It seems like a lot of talent comes from Detroit. We had
Terry
Dexter on earlier, and she's from Detroit. And then the director
Christine Swanson, the director from Clark District.
And it's like Detroit seems to be the thing now, you know?
Yeah.
Well, but it's always been.
Oh yeah, and I know like wherever I go when I was in college or here and we get to talking about Detroit, that's what everybody says. Like, you know, what is it? Why are there so many people from Detroit that are so talented and musically inclined? And I think it's just, we outside of the church world, Detroit just has always been a mecca for good music and talent and well done performance. And so I think it's just built into our city. It really is in our water, you know, and I don't take it for granted that, you know, I grew up in an era and I'm from a city that produced Commission and the Winans and Anita Baker and Diana Ross. And I could just go on the Clark Sisters. I could go on and on and on and on. And it's a normal thing. No, you know, to the rest of the world, it's like, oh my God, these are, you know, gospel greats. And we feel the same way too. But because we always have access to them because, you know, the Clarkes, you know, they all go to their different churches and they're there every Sunday, or Fred Hammond's at his church every Sunday and you can, you know, go hear him lead praise and worship or whatever anytime. So when they do concerts, we come out and we turn out for them, but we're used to it. You know, we're used to hearing that good music and seeing them in church services and, you know, at different events all the time.
Well, that has to be an experience to just go to church hopping every Sunday. So just to be able to go to Vicky Winans' church, go to Fred Hammond and Clark's Mother Clark Sisters, Aretha Franklin's church. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
To be around that influence. Wow.
Yeah. Before I moved to New York, I was a member at Perfection Church, where Marvin Winans is the pastor. And I sang in the choir there, and I did all kind of stuff there. And he was – I love him. I miss him so much. He's a great pastor. And, you know, when he found out my uncle – used to play bass for them, and he taught Fred Hammond how to play the bass. So when he found out I was his niece, he just was like, "Oh my God, I can't believe this! What?" And you know, and then he found out I could sing, and you know, and then that all happened, and he was so cultivating, and the you know, even when the movie came out, I happened to go home about a month before, about 2 weeks before all of this, the quarantine stuff shut down, and I didn't get to see him. But everybody at church was like, "Oh my God, we cannot believe you're in this movie. We can't wait." You know, and I've always had that like hometown love and, you know, support. And so it's I'm so used to it, and I'm so grateful for it, that, you know, being gone for so long now, and I look back and I'm like, "Man, I really, you know, I had it good, you know, where I come from."
Wow. Did you form any lasting relationships with any of your castmates or the Clark sisters after the movie's been over?
Oh, yeah. Me and all the girls, Christina, Kiara, Shalea, and Raven, we all keep in touch when somebody has a birthday, or Raven just had her little girl, and different things. We all, you know, support each other. We make sure we reach out. We check in on each other. I got to talk to all the Clark sisters, except, well, I talked a little bit to Twinkie, but more so Karen, Jackie, and Dorinda. But Jackie, we keep in touch regularly. She just keeps me cracking up, and, you know, she's so sweet, and she's just so excited about how everything turned out, and just, you know, their careers too. You know, this put them on the map all over again. So, you know, that was really cool for her, and I know anytime I can get her on the phone, and we'll laugh and talk. You know, she's always like, "Oh, when are you coming home again? You know, you got to come by. I'm cooking." And I'm like, "Of course." I was joking with her the other day. I said, "Well, can I wear pants?" Girl, you know,
door slammed in your
face. I said, "Because I don't want no door slammed in my face." She said, "Of course not." She said, "Well, but you see how I feel now, right?" I said, "Yeah."
Yeah, she's an amazing cook. I watched some of her segments on YouTube, Cooking with Jackie,
yeah.
And she really cooks, like, amazing.
Oh, yeah, she don't play. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. that's funny. That's crazy. So when you come in town now, like you, Kiara, and Christina, and Shalea, and Raven, but you and Christina and Shalea, are you guys thinking about, like, collaborating on your projects together or doing something? Because that blend that you guys did with Jonah Lawrence, it was very reminiscent of the Clark sound.
Mm-hmm.
So are you guys, like, looking to?
We haven't talked about it, but I think that is definitely something we should talk about. I know it's kind of hard because everybody has their own, you know, careers and what they're doing, and, you know, and especially right now with things just being so kind of up in the air, everybody's really spending a lot of energy cultivating their brands and their music and getting music out and getting on whatever their next project is. But I'm sure it's just because we just haven't talked about it. I think it would be awesome to do that. It'd be cool for sure.
Yeah, I definitely look forward to that when you guys started releasing the videos of you guys in the studio singing together with Donald Lawrence.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, is this for real? Or is this like a dub or something? Like, are they dubbing over is the Clark sisters singing over these girls pretending to sing? Because it was so perfect. Like, the blend was so perfect.
Okay.
It was amazing. And it was like,
the emotions are definitely there.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I think we even surprised ourselves when we heard the playback.
I heard y'all were having church on set.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. Oh, yeah. We had a couple of moments where, it got deep. It got real. And we said, "Oh, all right." All right, let's do it then. We're going to go ahead and go forth. Let's go forth then.
And one of the things that Christine shared with us, that when you guys were in the hospital with Anjanae playing Maddie Moss, and I guess it was, you know, her deathbed scene, and you guys had to break out and sing for the nurse, and she's like, they literally sang live right there on the spot.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, wow.
We did not know coming in that day that we were going to do that. And she Christine came in and said, so ladies, what I want is for you guys to just start singing something. Y'all decide which one of the songs, but just, I want, maybe Praying Spirit she had thrown out there, and I thought that was a perfect song for the moment. And we literally just did that. We did a panel the other day, all of the cast, and I was telling them how a lot of people don't know that. So in that particular moment, Kiara sings the top, Shalaya and I sing the middle, but of course one of us was going to drop down to the bottom, which would have been me in true, you know, Jackie form. But because of just the moment or whatever, I don't know why, I think it's because in the studio I recorded all of the parts. I was kind of the doubler for everybody. I started singing the top. And Shalaya sang her part, which she would have normally sang, but Kiara was the one that would have had to jump down to the bottom. And she did it. So what you guys hear is Kiara's on the bottom, I'm on the top, and Shalaya's in the middle. And nobody knows that except us, or you guys know now, but except us. And it was totally not planned that way. Even, you know, after one or two takes, Kiara was like, what are you doing? I don't know. It just came out. She's like, well, I'm cool with it. Let's just do it. You know, because our blend just got so tight that you cannot tell. Probably now if you go back and listen to it and watch it, you'll be like, oh, yeah, I can tell now. But Kiara's on the bottom there, not me. So it just speaks to all the time that we spent together, just bonding and getting to know each other, and then the time in the studio and the singing on set. It just got us locked like a group that's been singing together for years.
Listen, I felt it, though, in that one part when Mr. Clark hit you.
Oh, yeah.
That was tough.
Yeah,
oh, wow.
I was about to jump off my seat. That was the moment that I was like, oh, heck no.
That was very unexpected. Like, I did not think they were going to show anything like that, or there was anything like that ever happening in their life. So when that scene happened, I think everybody just was floored. Like, what? Did he just...
Yeah. Yeah, I think that whole storyline about Jackie, most people didn't know that. A lot of people didn't know that Jackie is their half sister. She has a different father, but the only man that she knew to be her father was him, because Maddie married Albert when Jackie was two. So Jackie never knew her father. She thought this guy was her father, and then where we find her in the movie, she has, you know, since then found out, and he's been very vocal to her about the fact that, you know, I favor Denise. I look at Denise as my oldest child, not you. I just took you in because I married your mother. And that's a hard...
Wow.
Wow. You know what? You just know, made so much sense of where the divide comes in with... I don't want to dwell on that whole subject, but you just made so much sense why there is so much animosity between the sisters and the other sister that's not in the group anymore, because that is her favorite tagline, I'm the first Clark. And now it makes sense, because it was embedded in her brain that she was the first Clark by her father, and she wore it like a badge of honor. Okay,
right.
Now it makes sense. It makes sense now. Yeah.
And there are,
it's very sad to hear Jackie go through so much, because when everyone describes their encounter with Jackie, it's always like she's a mother figure. She's very loving. She's very down to earth. She tells it like it is. She's very real and raw. And to know that she had to go through that, and at the same time, she was considered the pillar of the family. You know,
right?
So she still had a strength. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Beautiful person.
It explains a lot about why, you know, when I spoke to her, we had a meeting right after I was cast. I was able to get a meeting with her, and we talked for almost 4 hours, and we laughed and joked. But there was, I think, part of why Jackie is so funny and She's so humorous. It's because a lot of that is to just kind of buffer the pain that she has felt over the course of her life. And she's 70, 71 now. But to go through your whole life feeling like you weren't fully a part in some way. You didn't, people, you know, she told me a couple of times in stories where, you know, they'd be just finished some big performance at, you know, Essence or something. And people would walk up to her like, who are you? Like, they honestly thought she was just like a helper or a background singer or something. And she said, you know, do people not know that I know that they make jokes about me or that, you know, they don't think I can sing? I know they do that, and it hurts. I know people aren't trying to be hurtful, but it goes along with my whole life. I've had to deal with not feeling fully a part, not being fully recognized because, you know, I have a different dad than my sisters. And, of course, they've never treated me like that or anything like that. I've always been a full sister, but I'm different from them in that way, which means also genetically I'm different and vocally I'm different. And, you know, I didn't feel as confident as they did. And, you know, mama just didn't really have a lot of patience for that when we were coming up. And so I just kind of got left by the wayside when I really could have probably taken more of a lead role, but I just didn't. And it just broke my heart to hear her say that. Cause
wow, that's very sad.
She's an older woman now. Yeah.
And so people can identify with her on that note, too.
Yeah.
I still can identify with her.
Yeah, that whole situation with Jackie, like people making comments about her vocal skill and everything, people don't realize the part that she plays in the group is very needed and very necessary for them to have the Clark sound. And it's difficult being able to sing next to people like Karen Clark Sheard and Dorinda Clark and Twinkie that do a lot of vocal acrobatics. So Jackie sings like right here, like, you know, she sings at the bottom and she goes up at the higher altos, and she's switching in and out of the background when one goes to the next lead or whatever. And she's playing a big part of the whole background blend and everything like that. But at the same time, Jackie has a beautiful voice. It's just not it's just not like the Karen and the Dorinda and the Twinkie. But she has a beautiful voice, and she has one of the most commercially crossover voices to me out of the group. But, you know, a lot of people are into the acrobatics and all that type of stuff. But I love to hear her sing. And I also love to hear her sing, what's that song? Angel Watching Over Me. I think that's the name of it.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Yeah, she has a beautiful voice.
I love
voice.
Her her Wonderful Counselor. That's just period one of my favorite parts of the song. She just is so it was just like she was the person to lead that, not anybody else. It was perfect. And yes. I try to tell her whenever I can, like, that I just love her voice and I love what she does. She knows what her voice does. You know, and I love that she knows that. And I hope I jump out there to say I know that she feels like a little feather in her cap after this movie, because I feel like, and that was my goal as an actor, to make her feel like she was seen. She was heard.
Right.
She wasn't just some background person that was had the last name, but she wasn't important because she wasn't Karen or Dorinda or Twinkie, you know?
And she has to remember that gift to be like, to have that musical gift came from the Moss side. To me, it came
from the
Moss side, because when you look at Bill Moss and the Celestials, Jay Moss and Bill Moss Jr., you know, and the other sisters in the Moss family that don't sing commercially anymore, but they are all amazing singers. And I feel like that's something that she should remember, that, you know, that gift came from the Moss side. And so it's in her. It's in her DNA.
It came from, in my opinion, it came from God. Everybody has a gift and talent. And it's not supposed to be the same as the other sisters. She's an individual and unique on her own. And I would love for her to just appreciate and value what she has in her and then take it to the next step, even at her age. You know, age never stops.
Oh, she just did a song with Mary J. Blige. She literally just did a song with Mary J. Blige a couple months ago. And it's really banging. I'm telling you, it's a really... great, it's an amazing song, especially to take to the gym and work out with, or playing in the car. She, you know, at 71 years old, she just did this amazing song with Mary J. Blige, and it's not no slow song or anything like that. I mean, it's a real banger. So she's still
so
she's amazing.
Continue to like take on, and even with you playing this role, as I said before, you activated a legacy for Jackie, because that's the role that you played, and for the Clark sisters, because it's a story about their lives. So kudos to you for bringing it to life, and kudos to Jackie and all the Clark sisters for bringing us the music that they did with the voices that they had.
Yeah, yeah, amen, for sure.
Okay, we want to thank our guest, actress, singer, Broadway superstar, film and television. You know, she's making her mark in history right now. She's soon to be a legend. I mean, you're walking in that path right now. We can all see it.
I really
want to thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule. And joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me. This has been great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. This was the Every Artist Podcast. We are signing out now with my host, Lisa G. This is Mae Santiago and our beautiful guest, Angela Burchett. Thank you.
Thank you.
Have a blessed weekend.
Hey, Jeremy.
Just an extra part. Smaller, quicker, smarter, faster. Put your code, get in there. Feel it lost, look around.
Sorry, the computer's down.
Push a button, pull a lever. Techno is a super clever. High efficient, low cost, human slave, mental boss. Build a gadget, break a circuit. Doesn't need a man to work it. Stop, lady, look. Mister, listen to the clock, sisters.
Oh,